Hey everyone, welcome to SPED Homeschool Conversations. We are so glad that you are with us again tonight for our conversations. And this month we are focusing on reading remediation and different ways of instruction for parents to help students who struggle with reading. So we just thank you for joining us. This broadcast is put on by SPED Homeschool. We are a nonprofit that helps parents homeschool children with special educational needs. And our topic tonight is how direct instruction helps parents teach struggling readers. And our guest is Michael Maloney. Welcome, Michael, and thank you for joining us again on our broadcast. I'm so glad to have you back.
Thanks, Peggy. It's always good to come back to your program and meet your all of your new and exciting homeschoolers.
We just keep growing, so it's always good to have guests back because it's nice for them to see new content. And then if you like what Michael has to say and you want to hear more, you'll have to go back onto our YouTube channel and find the videos we did with him a while back talking about just direct instruction overall, not just on reading, and your methodology that you use that includes behavior and a whole bunch of other things too. Well,
let's stick with reading.
Yes, let's stick with reading tonight. So I thought we would start out just with maybe an introduction about, you know, your background, especially in the homeschooling realm, and then a little bit about the curriculum that you have and how all that came about, and just kind of some history.
Okay. Well, I'm a teacher. I'm a principal. I was a school psychologist. I've worked inside and outside of public education for approximately 50 years. I was trained as a behavioral psychologist, and I was asked by school districts to come in and solve behavior problems, kind of scrape kids off the walls, get them back in their seats and all of that.
Yeah.
It didn't take me very long to find out that every time I saw a child with a behavior problem, I also was looking at a child who had skill deficits. And the most common of those was the inability to read. And people may not know it, but there are 10 million children in the United States who are having difficulty learning how to read today.
Yes.
So it's not an uncommon problem. About 35% of our children struggle learning how to read. And the major reason for that is that we are not preparing their teachers with tools that have been proven effective in order to be able to have them be successful with their students. And homeschoolers are going to face the same problem.
Right. Because we use the same methodologies as the schools do.
Well, the problem is that there is very little proven research that the schools can point to say this is the program we're using and this is why we're using it. And that situation results in people who are essentially consumers with little information or knowledge picking some kind of program that they've heard about or hope it's going to work, and it fails to do so. As a scientist, I want something that is absolutely rock solid, especially if I'm dealing with a child who's having a struggle. And the only system out there that can provide that at this point in time is called direct instruction.
Right, and that's what you're the Maloney method, which is named after you.
Yeah, it's a portion of the Maloney method. It's the instructional component of the Maloney method. We have other components, the objectives and the measurement and all of that. But without careful instruction, children who are at risk become easily confused. And the creator of direct instruction, the late Zig Engelmann, was my mentor for about 30 years. So I got very well trained in how to not only deliver, but to create instructional sequences that actually work. The benefit of direct instruction is that it has 40 to 45 years of rock solid research history. Now, your listeners may not have ever heard of the Follow-Through Project. It was the largest study ever done in education. It was done in the United States from the late 60s through the mid 70s. And it compared 16 different methods head to head with 500,000 kids over almost 20 years at a cost of $1.2 billion.
Wow, and we should have all heard of that.
The government did not release the results. And almost no one knows about follow-through. But in that study, direct instruction finished first in literally every single category: reading, writing, spelling, language, math. And they accounted for 75% of the variance in all of the data of the study, even though they were only 1/16th of the treatment. 14 different models that were tried failed utterly. So as a psychologist and as a teacher, when I found direct instruction, I thought, wow, this is amazing. And so as I got to learn about it, I found some amazing facts. One of them is, if you teach a child the 1,000 most common words in English, they can read 85% of anything you put in front of them. Most people don't know that. The remarkable thing is that 650 of those 1,000 words are phonetically regular. Which means if you can string the sounds together without stopping between them, the child can figure out 650 of the words if you teach them the sounds and sound combinations. And there are only 64 sounds and sound combinations that you need in the English language.
Got it. So you're kind of working backwards from where you want to be, and it gets down to the basics of what's going to get you there most efficiently for the most effective reading.
But there are some things you have to be very careful about. You got to be very careful about the way in which you arrange the sounds and sound combinations to teach them. A lot of programs teach short vowel sounds. A, e, I, a, Well, I'm sorry, but those sound a whole lot alike.
Yeah, they do.
Especially to a child who's having problems. So we teach a, m, and t. Why? They don't sound alike. They don't look alike. The chances of the child getting confused are about zero.
Right. And they don't look, they don't look anything alike.
They don't share visual or auditory characteristics. And of course, the bugaboo is b and d.
Yes. And we always put them together, don't we?
Well, let's put p and b in there with them because those are the same thing.
Right.
You take a p, flip it up, it becomes a b. Take it, flip it sideways, it becomes a different one. They all sound alike. B, d, p, k.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't children get confused by that?
Right.
So you have to be very careful. What we do is we figure out, to write a story, I need the word and, which means d has to come first in the list because I can't ever put a sound in a word until I have the sound.
Exactly.
Well, how can the child know it if there's sounds in the words that they can't, that they don't already know?
Mm-hmm.
Like me putting Greek letters into half the words in a story and expecting you to be able to figure them out.
Right. Well, I remember when I was learning the Russian alphabet, it was so much easier when they didn't look anything like each other and I could get those down and then I could get to the next one and then figure that out.
That's right. And so we will take B and we'll put it in lesson 14. They'll never see a B until we get 14 lessons into it. And by then they've already had two sets of checks to make sure that they can do sounds at 50 to 60 a minute. Right.
Yep.
So we know they're fluent. We know they're rock solid on their sounds. And then we can introduce Q, but let's put a U beside it because all the words with Q tend to have a U as the next sound or the next letter.
Exactly.
That makes it look different than B, D, and P. So that's some of the design features of a direct instruction program that makes it so superior to anything else that you're going to see. And what we want to do is we want the child to understand and know and be able to deal with the sounds and the sound combinations, string them together for the sounds that, for the words that are phonetically regular, and use a different strategy for the ones that are not.
Right. Yes, because it building those in segments then allows them to process them and integrate them little by little instead of, you know, getting through. I think typically kids get all these this instruction on the sounding out the words, and then they get all these rules at the end, which make it totally confusing.
Well, that's really unfair to the child, but that's because the program is poorly designed. And our teachers and homeschooling parents are not instructional designers. They don't know that putting B and D together can create confusion for a child who's having trouble. And throw in P and Q or some of the others.
That wouldn't have even passed my mind.
No.
You know, until I think we talked the last time and I thought, oh, gosh, yes, that makes so much sense.
Well, it does. And the result of that is we get a program that has safety locks all the way through it so the child can never get confused. We'll take every fifth lesson, we'll take all the sounds we've taught them and review them in a test. They'll do all the words that are made up from those sounds and only words that are made from those sounds into another test so we know that they can read the words fluently.
Right.
And then we can only use those words in the stories we're going to create for them to read. So there's never a choice about, do I guess about this? What's that combination that I have never seen before?
Right. Yes. It's review and then it's testing their remembrance of what they've already done. And it helps them be successful instead of failing all the time, which I think a lot of curriculums do lead them towards.
Well, part of the problem is that some of the curriculum relies on the child using cues that have nothing to do with reading. It's
really?
Like, look at the first sound and tell me what you think the word is. Well, that promotes guessing.
Yeah.
And they'll guess just often enough to be correct to keep to maintain guessing.
Yes.
Yeah. So you cannot do that to a child who's one of the 35% of kids who struggles to learn to read.
Mm-hmm.
That's very damaging.
Yeah.
The other thing is to look at a sound and basically say, well, look at the picture.
Mm-hmm.
Figure it out from the picture. What do you think this word could be? Well, if there's a picture of a hippopotamus and the word starts with an H, there's a pretty good chance a kid will say hippopotamus or whatever. But the thing is, that's not reading.
Exactly. That's kind of trying to decode without any instruction.
Yeah. And it's basically trying to discover what these words are rather than be able to attack them and decode them and figure them out and gradually add to your store of knowledge.
Right. Well, and we know this with math. I mean, this has been talked about in math for so long. You work with the child until they get the problems right over and over and over again. And then you test them and say, what is this word? Once they've done it, or this math problem, once they've done it so many times that you know they're going to be successful.
Well, yeah, and you take measures of that. And this is unfortunately where this falls apart with many programs. There is no data taken on the performance of the child.
Right.
So the teacher doesn't know whether they should review. The parent doesn't know whether they should move forward. It's really a difficult situation to put the instructor in because they have no good reason to think that this child is solidly based in this much of the curriculum. And if
That's
we just take a thousand words and continually add them as the child masters them and can demonstrate mastery, then we don't have any problems. We can remediate the problems of children who are considered dyslexic or whatever. About, I would guess, 90% of the children who get diagnosed with dyslexia have what I call dysteachia.
I love that. Exactly. No, I think that is very true. They just, they're wired differently to be taught in a way that needs concise steps.
Everybody's so wired that way. We all learn that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so basically they're being asked to do things for which they have no instructional basis. And everyone thinks, Well, the poor kid, he's got some kind of problem, and it's a neural problem. Well, no, you can't take that problem and stick it back inside the kid's head, put a label on him, and blame him for the failure of instruction. That's completely unfair.
Yes. Yeah. So we have some guests. I know I see that we have some live guests joining us. We have a hello from Nietzsche. She says, hi, Michael. Hi, Peggy. So glad to be joining you live. We are glad you are with us, too. So just for you that are joining us live, if you're not listening to the podcast or watching us on YouTube, you can put your questions and comments up. And we would love to be able to address those. If you have any specific questions about direct instruction or about reading and just where your child is at and asking Michael how direct instruction might be able to help and where to get started, that's always a good question. So, yeah. But I guess we kind of have talked a little bit about the direct instruction method. Is there anything else as far as the methodology that for a parent that has never seen this method, what does it look like? How is it used?
Yeah, what we're going to do, whether it's direct instruction in a reading, writing, spelling math, it really doesn't matter, is you take a domain of information. And you look through that domain to see if there are any rules that govern most, if not all of it. Mm. And for example, in reading, there aren't very many rules. But one of them is like the final E rule. If you have a word with an E on the end, it oftentimes will make the vowel preceding that long.
Right.
So you have the word thin, and if I put an E on it, it becomes fine. Well, in direct instruction, we make use of that rule. We will teach the children a list of words like cop or mop or fin or tim. And then when they can do the non-examples where there is no E, we will take them back through that list, put E's on each one, teach them the rule. E at the end of the word makes the vowel say its name. So now read me the list again. Well, that's the smallest difference they can ever see between those kinds of words. And then when we're done, we'll systematically and randomly wipe out half of the E's. Now we'll take them through the list a third time, and this time they have to discriminate using their rule whether that E makes the vowel long or whether there is no E, so the vowel remains short. And that's one of the kind of really in-depth measures of teaching using direct instruction, because it's rule-based. It takes the examples, the non-examples, and it teaches how to differentiate one from the other.
Which I can see working extremely well for a child on the autism spectrum. They love rules. If you can make something follow a rule, that it makes more sense to them. Because so much of reading is taught, you know, up to a certain point, and then it's all the exceptions. If you start out with just, you know, the basis of the rules, and like you were talking about, you can teach them a lot just for what they need to use.
If you went through a chapter of a book and just underlined all the words that end with E, you will find some exceptions. But we take those out and we teach those separately. So some and come and love, the rule does not work for those, but we still need to teach them. So we treat them as exceptions and teach them differently.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So if any of your listeners have questions, they're certainly they should get them in front of us, because, you know, we will do our best to answer them.
Yes, definitely. Yep. And this is our last week. We're talking about reading. We're headed on to a whole nother topic next week. So get those reading questions in.
Another question that comes up oftentimes that people confuse is the difference between getting the information off the page quickly and easily and being able to understand what that information is telling you, reading comprehension.
Mm-hmm.
Well, many children who have difficulty with decoding have horrible skills at trying to understand what they're reading. And doesn't that make a lot of sense? If you're guessing at one third of the words and not getting them accurately, why would you expect to be able to draw conclusions or gain information or knowledge from what it is you're reading? It's not going to happen.
Right.
So we treat that separately. We teach that as a completely different set of skills.
Mm-hmm.
First, I want you to decode accurately, get the information clearly and correctly, and then we'll get into what does this information mean. Two different sets of skills. Some kids are really good at some, others at others, but we need both.
Well, and you need the fluency. I mean, you just know when you're reading something that you aren't familiar with, or maybe it's in a different field of study that you aren't familiar with, so lots of words are not familiar with your vocabulary. It does make it difficult because you're so focused on just how to say that word,
yeah,
and you aren't understanding it in context.
Your reading rate will drop to around 100 or below words per minute.
Hmm. Okay.
So if we wanted to ask, well, how quickly should a child read out loud? Do you have any idea, Peggy?
I have no idea.
Okay, well, I'll give you a hint. You speak at 200 words a minute.
So probably about the same then.
Absolutely. And when you tell that to people, their eyes get very big and wide, and they say that can never happen. Well, the fact of the matter is you're speaking at 200 words a minute. So it's not impossible for you to look at text, and as long as there's nothing on that page that is confounding you, there's no reason you can't read it at 200 words a minute. And we don't start there. With children in kindergarten, we start at 100, then we move it up to 150 in grade 1, 200 or 175 in grade 2, and so on. By the time a child is in the fourth grade, we expect them to be reading at 200 words per minute. With no more than two errors, because I don't want sloppy readers.
That's good that you're watching that, because I don't think I've ever seen a reading curriculum that does that.
No, that's true. And we record that data and we share it with the kids.
Very neat.
Yeah,
I can see that being motivation too.
Well, it does, and it's very helpful to the parent because they know when the child hits 200 words a minute. Mm-hmm. That they can now move on to adding new curriculum to the mix, and they'll be fine with that.
Got it.
If they're reading along at 100 words a minute, you'd better be very careful about adding anything new to the mix.
Oh, I'm sure. Yes, because, they're going to be more confused.
They get overwhelmed.
Fast. Yep. So we've got some questions. Are you ready? First, Nietzsche said that she's even using this curriculum with her typical learner, which... makes
good.
Sense. I mean, use the same curriculum for all your kids if it works.
Absolutely.
You know. But she asked if, can you speak about fluency?
Yes, I certainly can. When I teach children sounds and sound combinations, they have to be able to, whatever that set of sounds and sound combinations is, as we add more and more, they consistently have to be able to do 50 to 60 sounds and sound combinations in 1 minute or 25 to 30 in 30 seconds. When I'm teaching them a list of words that they've learned made up from those sounds, they have to read 30 to 40 words per minute or in 30 seconds with no more than two errors. And when we move them into reading script or stories, I want them reading 100 words a minute in kindergarten, 125 in grade 1, 150 in grade 2, and so on until they're at 200 words per minute with no more than two errors. That is rock hard science based on hundreds of thousands of children that we have been teaching for 45 years. So you can count, you can take that one to the bank.
So parents whose heads are spinning now thinking that I've got to like somehow track all this information in my head. This is all laid out in the curriculum, right?
Yes, it is. And it is in our curriculum. It's not in everybody's curriculum, but take any book. Take a chapter book and ask the child to read for 30 seconds. If they can read, 50 to words if they're a kindergarten student, then we're fine. If they can't, then back up the bus because they've got to know each piece before they can move on. The problem they'll run into is the vocabulary in the story is likely not going to be limited to the sounds and sound combinations that you've taught them.
Yes, exactly.
So now you're trapped because you've got A-U-G-H somewhere in a word.
Mm-hmm.
And they have not been taught that combination. So expect error.
That's not a good measure either.
No. And the thing is, get a curriculum that doesn't do that.
Right.
And the direct instruction is about the only one that I know that doesn't do that.
Yeah. Okay, so we have another question. You ready?
Yeah.
So this is from Kimberly. She said, how quickly should I correct my daughter when she is reading out loud and says an incorrect word? I tend to do it right away, but I wonder if I'm messing up her momentum and or not giving her a chance to fix her own mistakes.
No, do it immediately. In fact, I tell parents, beat the mistake, okay?
Hmm.
We're sitting listening to a child read, and they come upon a word that they're not sure of. What do? They pause. Right? You listen to children read.
Yep.
When they don't know a word, they stop. Or they pause. Jump in then and tell them the word. Have them reread the sentence. Yeah. Why would you wait for them to make a mistake?
Exactly. Because then they're embedding that mistake and looking at the word and putting it into that memory bank wrong.
And you have to correct it.
Mm-hmm.
So why not do a pre-correction? Just when you hear the pause, jump in, tell them the word. That word says, lemon, okay? And then have them read the sentence again.
Ah, yes. That does make sense.
And if you give them a passage with 50 words in it and say, honey, I'd like you to get to here. Do the best you can. I'd like you to get to here in 30 seconds. And then work on that passage until they don't have errors where they can do all of those words. But again, it's going to help you so much more if you have a program that doesn't introduce spurious words that they've never seen before because it's interesting in the story.
Yes. Yeah. It has to be written to the point where they've already seen those words out of context and can be proficient with them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that goes on to our next question. Nietzsche's asked, she said, my son can read random words per minute at a much higher rate than in a story. Why does this change?
Wow. That is very, very rare. I do not.
I think her son is on the autism spectrum. And
I've worked with autistic children for quite a long time now, and I've never seen that. And I don't have a ready answer. Give that person my phone number and have them give me a call tomorrow so we can discuss this and see what I can learn and what I can maybe help her with, or him or her.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's interesting. Yeah. I mean, all kids are so different on where they store memory things and just, working with them. But again, if you go back to a methodology that instructs even those nuances that our kids can throw at us. I know I'm tutoring a young man that has a lot of memory issues, and it kind of baffles me at times, but we just keep going and, where all that information is stored, he's figuring it out. But
I never assume that I can understand what's going on inside another human brain. So I rely very, very heavily on what comes out of their mouths or what comes out of their fingers, what they do with their writing skills as a direct measure of real performance. That's what I want to see. I want to see a child look at this word, be able to figure it out because it's phonetically regular and I've taught them all the sounds, and get it correctly and be able to move on. If I can't do that, I'm not doing that child a service.
Right. Exactly. You're just kind of pushing them along, which is what we see happen too often in the public schools. They just get moved on without having mastery, and then they get further and further behind because they've never gotten the basics.
And that's why the rate of illiteracy across North America hasn't changed in like 100 years, because we just shove these kids through the door and out into the world.
Yeah.
It's unfair to them. It's criminal in my view.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Our guest that had made that comment, she said she does have your number and she'll call you. And I know you've said this in the past when I interviewed you last time, that you want parents to call you and talk to you. And I know it's on your website. Your phone number is on your website. I think it's maybe on our website too. The Maloney Method is one of our partner organizations. So you'll find them on our website as well.
Yes, I welcome their calls. Just if you miss me, because I'm not always here, just leave a time zone and a number and I'll call you so I'm not waking you up in the middle of the night or whatever.
Exactly. That's a very good point. Yeah. So we have another question. It says, do you have any recommendations on how to modify reading instruction for a child that is nonverbal? And nonverbal doesn't always mean that they don't talk, but it sometimes means that they can't talk in a situation. And in other situations, they do. Sometimes it has to do with anxiety and other things.
Well, I would be very, very much careful about their language skills before I would worry about their reading skills. And children who, especially if they're on the autism spectrum and they're nonverbal, they need a real heavy influence on their language skills and let the reading go for now, because you're not going to succeed. And there is one program out there, again, it's a direct instruction program written by Zig Engelmann, and it's called Language for Learning.
Hmm.
It's incredibly expensive. Yeah, and you should either get a group of people together who need it and share it. Yeah, Language for Learning. It's a wonderful program. I've got a number of my clients that are using it, and it will do the job. It's all carefully scripted, so you're not going to get in trouble if you do it according to the book, right?
Right. And that's one of the highlights of direct instruction. I guess we didn't go over that, but it gives you even what to say to your student, right?
Yes.
So that you aren't trying to make things up along the way.
Yeah, it's a huge criticism. People say it's not creative. You know, I got to follow this stupid script. Mm. Well, the stupid script has taught millions of kids to read. Thank you very much.
that is true.
The approach to it may not.
Right.
Right. It's a little bit like health problems. If you go to a hospital, the doctors are all trained pretty much the same way as to how to remove an appendix.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't really want some doctor going in there and doing discovery surgery on your 7-year-old.
Right. That's very true.
Yeah.
So we've talked about the direct instruction method and we've talked a lot about how it's beneficial for the student. Do you have anything else to add to that as far as the benefit on the student side, as far as using this?
On the student side, you're going to get rid of a lot of confusion.
Right.
You're going to get a program that's very carefully laid out, that everybody knows what's going to happen now and what's going to happen next. And that alone gives them a lot of security.
Mm-hmm.
For the parent, it's also good because everything is laid out for you. This is a roadmap to the gold mine. And
right.
So just do what it says to do and listen very carefully to your student so that if he or she makes a mistake, you correct it immediately and you'd never let corrections get by you. And I don't know if you've ever mentioned to your listeners, Peggy, that we have the training on our website for free.
I have linked that to that before, but definitely we should put that link up in the video feed as well.
Yeah, because the sounds sometimes that we use in direct instruction are different than the ones that any normal person being taught how to teach someone to read would do. And
There's
a reason for it. But the thing is that that's all covered there in an MP3 file. And there's an instructor's manual that walks you through all 14 steps in a direct instruction reading program. And they can go through it at their own time, at their own pace, and get to be really good at it. And I'm just basically walking you through it step by step, like I would with a child.
Got it. So you're learning how to do it and do it well.
First thing I'm going to do is I'm going to model it for you.
Mm-hmm.
Mine's in Oakland, and I do it, and I say, "Okay, now do that with me. Ready?" And we do it together. And when I hear your response match mine, then I say, "Okay, your turn," and the learner gets an opportunity. And that way, we never get ourselves in trouble because we always know that their response was exactly the same as mine, and mine was correct.
Right. So then it's like little checks and balances built into the even wording process, which is nice because then so what if a parent has taught reading for a while and they move to a direct instruction method? Do they start in the middle or do they start from the beginning?
Well, I would start with the tests that are on my website for the free testing.
Okay.
If the child makes more than 4 errors on that story that you ask them to read, then start there. If they make fewer than that, then make sure they're reading smoothly and quickly, and then move on to the next one.
Okay. Yeah. So there are ways to kind of jump in somehow in the middle.
Well, again, call me.
Right.
Or take an example of your child's reading and just count how many words they're doing and how many errors they made. That'll tell you.
Yeah.
This is all very logical.
It really is. And I think reading in general is not handled logically.
No. There's a lot of theories out there, and very few of them are supported by any kind of research. Direct instruction has a ton of research and millions of success stories. So to me, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah. So we have another question. Kimberly asks, any suggestions on kids who often miss endings in words? For instance,
yeah, absolutely.
Jumped and jumping.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, kids typically make 4 different kinds of errors. They put words in, they miscall a word, or they add a word that isn't there, or leave out a word that is there, or they stick an ending on a word, or take an ending and leave an ending off of a word. Those are the 5 major mistakes that kids make.
Really?
Yeah. And the leaving an ending off a word, you simply have them do it again. Oftentimes I'll say, listen, that says sending. What's that word? Sending. Good. And if it's a phonetically regular word, I'll sound it out, then have them sound it out, and then read it.
Don't
let errors get by you.
Is it oftentimes just they're going too fast, or they kind of get jumped on?
Yeah, they're not attending. They may be tired. They may be bored. They may be, being difficult.
I tend to do that. So I'm thinking, I got to figure out. I just speed read. I tend to read in blocks, which isn't always the best. We touched on, just even the part with the parent. And it takes all the guesswork out for the parent.
Right.
Because you're getting data, you're logging data, you're not going anywhere past where if your child isn't succeeding, you're stopping. And so
you're reviewing.
You just redo the lesson then? Is that kind of how it works as it goes back over what the child is missing?
If you had a list of words and then you give them to the child and give them a chance to read them for 30 seconds and they make 7 errors, well, then isolate those 7 words and review those. Yeah. What would your grandmother have done? Your grandmother would have said, okay, we're going to do these ones again, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is not magic. This is like pretty obvious. Pick the words that they're having difficulty with, practice them in smaller groups until they've got them, put them back in the group, and then let them try again. And don't go on until they have got a handle on this, because otherwise you're setting yourselves and them up for failure.
So true. Yep. Mm-hmm. Every time. That question is in the back of my head. How do I catch my child up? As a parent, the anxiety level gets so high and your child picks up on that. And you just have to go at the pace that they are going at.
Well, you need to teach quickly, too. When I teach children, I'm making 20 presentations per minute.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't want them to be able to lift their eyes off that page while I'm giving them instruction, because if they do, they're going to make a mistake. And if they're distracted, they're going to make an error. If I can keep the pace up, then they will be more attentive and they will be more correct. And it'll save us both a lot of time and effort.
That is very true. But yes.
If in doubt, everybody slows down when kids make mistakes. It's counter condition. It's counterintuitive, but you shouldn't. You should speed up.
Hmm. Yeah, I can see the logic in that.
Yeah.
Keeping them moving. It's the momentum. You can't let it slide.
That's right. Don't give them a chance to look out the window.
Right.
We'll have a break.
From their seat.
Right? And you can actually go outside and see what's out there, right? So, mm-hmm. Yeah. But right now, we are working hard and we're working fast and we're getting it right. And there's lots of praise that goes with that and encouragement.
Yes.
Maybe even points if you need them.
Mm. Right. So here's a very good question. Is it possible to ever catch up?
Yes, absolutely. 100%. I have taught 100,000 children how to catch up using direct instruction. But you need to be trained. You need to know what you're doing as the instructor. And on average, we will catch kids up at a rate of 2 to 2.5 years per year. So, yeah. And it's not me. Any parent can do this if they do their homework.
So how much of an investment as a parent do I have to make to do my homework so I am efficient at this method?
If you go to Nelson, the people who publish Direct Instruction Mastery, the Mastery Reading Series, it's going to cost you hundreds of dollars, like probably $300 to $500 for each level. We started our books with homeschoolers because when I wrote my first book, Teach Your Children Well, it was the homeschoolers who came to my book signings and they said, read your book, loved it. Where's your curriculum? I said, back in my...
I remember this discussion, yes.
And it's not in any shape for you to use. I said, well, can you get it in shape? So we built the products and we sold them for $99.95 for a set of everything you're going to need to teach a child each of 4 levels.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Yeah, and now you're working on a new project to digitize this.
Yes.
Which is very exciting.
Well, yes, it's going to be very exciting because it's going to relieve the instructor, the parent, of the responsibility of having to learn all of this direct instruction training and supervision that currently a parent needs to go through in order to be a successful direct instruction teacher. We are going to embed all of that into the iPad so that the parent listens to the child as the computer teaches him and hits one of 2 buttons. If he gets it correctly, they hit next, and it brings up the next set of words or whatever it is. And if the student doesn't get it correctly, they hit back, and it gives the student a second chance or third chance to get this again. And each time it's going to be model, my turn, listen, do it with me. Your right. turn. And so they can't help but learn.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's very exciting. And I know you just had a funding project and it's well funded. And so you're off and running and that's very exciting. So that is something coming definitely. But
within a year. Yes.
Awesome. Well, I can't wait to introduce that.
Me neither.
So the other question we have is the Maloney Method curriculum going to help with reading comprehension as well?
Not in its present form because I haven't written those books yet. But I would recommend to
that word yet.
yeah, I'll get to that if my health holds up and I get a few minutes.
You've got to keep up on that rowing machine. We were talking about workouts before we started.
We both are trying to stay fit so we can work well and hard.
Yeah. But
I would recommend you go to Nelson for this and you get the correct, they should write this down probably, the Corrective Reading Series Comprehension. Okay, and there are 4 levels, A, B, C, and D, and those will teach children everything they need to know about reading comprehension. Wow. But they're expensive. Again, it's the kind of thing, if you have a homeschooling group, they should take the manual, take it apart, put it in plastic pages, and make people sign in and sign out the lessons and put a $20 bill on the table that they get back when they return the lesson, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, but that's, Engelmann wrote a series of reading comprehension lessons, and they are excellent. I've used them for years. I'd love to write them, again, an equivalent with the measurement component.
Right.
Because we did that separately, and my students could write the conclusions to deductions at 10 conclusions per minute.
That's amazing.
They were very skilled because they had lots of practice and lots of good instruction.
Exactly. It isn't the guessing game again, which we talked about comprehension last week with our guest, and she was saying, why do you ask them these extraneous questions? Because you're leading them in places that has nothing to do with the conclusion.
Right.
Well, and so,
good.
Yeah, that was a very good discussion. So I guess we already answered Kimberly's next question. She said, when is the online system going to be available? So you said within the year.
Yes, we're starting now.
Awesome. And so one question I wanted to ask you is, you know, you talk a lot to parents. You're very open to parents calling you and asking you questions. What is one of the questions you get most from families when they call you?
How am I going to teach my child to read? That's probably 70% of them.
Wow.
And many times it's because they've got a curriculum and they're really slaving over it, and it's not getting the job done. And I have to walk them through it and say, well, look, just go count the words on the page and see how many of them have not been taught prior to that page. And then the light goes on. It's like, oh, I'm setting this child up to do things they've never been taught.
Right, yeah.
Well, that makes no sense.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a very interesting story, and kids love the stories. Okay, then read stories like that to them. Don't expect them to read them.
Teach
them to read.
Mm-hmm. Read out louds, audiobooks, those things, yes, are not.
All of those things are helpful, but they're not teaching kids to read.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
And for our garden variety student, they'll rip through this stuff so fast it'll make your head spin. That's the good news.
That is, because it helps them feel good about themselves if they especially have struggled in other curriculums to see the success happening over and over and over again. Just it boosts their confidence that I can do this.
Well, of course, and there's nothing works better than success.
Yes.
So make them successful. Teach them well.
Mm-hmm.
That means you know what you're doing. And unfortunately, we're not providing our teachers with that knowledge. So we can't blame the teachers. We're not providing the parents with that knowledge. So if the child isn't learning it at home, we can't blame them.
Mm-hmm.
We either give them a solution or we leave them with a problem. And direct instruction provides a solution. Right now, you have to learn some things in order to use it. But it's well worth the investment if you've got a child who's struggling or any child who's beginning to read.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
It takes the guessing work out and the stress, and it just makes it easy. You can open the book and do the lesson, which I know a lot of homeschool parents look for a curriculum like that. And so it's nice to know that there is an approach to reading that offers that.
Yes, there is. And it's published by Nelson for the schools, and I would recommend they not go that direction because it's expensive, or they're published by us for the decoding aspects, and they're relatively they're homeschool friendly in terms of the pricing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you got that down. Reading comprehension possibly coming after you work on this online thing.
Yeah.
So you've got a list of things to do.
and language first.
Yeah.
You know,
you want to talk a little bit about that as far as, you know, when do you know a child is even ready to start?
They're ready when you're ready.
Oh. That's a
you tell them they're ready, don't you? It's just when you start. And the thing is, what's the point of teaching a child to read words that they don't understand the meaning of?
Exactly.
That makes no sense. So a child needs, in the earlier years, they need a huge repertoire of language, and that can be taught a gazillion different ways.
Yes.
And the Language for Learning program is there for anyone who's struggling with that.
Hmm.
But I have to warn you, it's like $1,200.
Right.
It's a you know, published by a major publisher, and
It's written for the public schools that, you know, will invest in something like that because they're using it across the board with multiple kids, and that and they've got funding.
Well, yeah, they don't have anywhere near the funding they need.
Well,
but they're not using their funding well. They're buying into programs that are unproven and don't get results. And so, you know, they need to be brought up to speed as well.
Yeah. Well, talking about other programs, we have a question that just popped up, and it says, how does your program compare to Barton or Toe by Toe? I've never heard of Toe by Toe.
No idea.
Okay.
Sorry, I can't answer that. I don't have any background on those programs.
All right. Yep. So, yeah, I think Barton is an Orton-Gillingham, but it's very labor-intensive on the teacher's side, and you have to receive a lot of training.
Yes. For that. Well, Orton-Gillingham, that one I do know about, and it's a kind of a weak sister to direct instruction.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's structured.
Because a lot of parents will come to us saying, I just need that Orton-Gillingham program because that's what's going to work for my child.
Well, they think that, and in many cases, that would be the best choice they may know about.
Yes.
But Orton-Gillingham does not have the sophisticated instructional design that direct instruction has. Their design is much better than most, but it's not as good as any of the DI programs.
Good to know. Great to know for you. Well, yeah, because you're building in that constant testing, and you're looking at, and I don't think I've ever seen any other curriculum that does that. It's this constant measurement.
They don't exist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so you don't know if your child should move on or not. And this gives you definitely the ability to say, yes, we will move forward, or no, we need to go back and repeat.
Right. Now, if you have homeschoolers that are deadly keen on learning all of this, I do teach a course at the University of West Florida in their applied behavior analysis education section. It's the next one is going to start on the 9th of October.
Okay.
You might want to check the University of West Florida's website and see if that's something that might interest them. But this is for someone who wants to learn the entire thing, the Maloney method in its totality.
Right. And that it's many more components than the direct instruction, which we talked about in our previous interview. So
they can see those from your, they can see those in your YouTube channel.
Right. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Well, good. Well, do you have anything closing to share with our families as we're wrapping up here?
Yeah. First and foremost, if you are teaching children, you have the responsibility. We cannot ever blame it on the kid.
Mm.
Okay. Ogden Lindsley, one of my mentors, said, the child is always right. It's the instruction that's not.
Hmm.
So if you think that you've taught it and the child didn't get it, it's probably because whatever you told them had more than one possible interpretation and they took a different one and you're calling it wrong.
Yes. So, I love that.
Well, it's true.
It's so true, though. And yes. We leave that variable, that option kind of open and that mystery. And we say, well, didn't you get it? No. And no, they didn't.
No. And a third of the kids are going to be constantly confused by that kind of instruction. So be ready for it and get yourself some proper programs that will help you.
Right. Yeah, that is so true.
Yeah, there's some good math programs out there. Like what's the one from Asia?
The Singapore method?
Singapore math, yeah. It's very carefully ordered. Yeah, it's carefully done.
Mm-hmm. Up until the high school level, they don't really have
it. It falls apart there.
Yes, and I have a degree in physics, so I actually did the entire Singapore method through high school for my oldest. And it's more applied math, which he loved. Right. But there's no instruction manual at all. So you have to know how to do it. But
That's their shortcoming.
Yes.
I don't have a reading comprehension program. They don't have a secondary school level. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nobody bats 1,000.
Yes, exactly.
Well, thanks, Bobby. This has been great fun. Are there any final questions you have?
Yeah, and thank you for being on our broadcast again and definitely sharing on reading. We're very excited about your new project and when that comes out, and we'll definitely be letting our audience know about the progress on that. And then we'll be rooting for you with the reading comprehension afterwards. We'll send vitamins your way.
if at some point you decide to do a program on spelling.
Yes, that will definitely be down the line. We've already got our themes through March and April, I think.
Okay, so well, when you get to spelling, give me a shout. I have one program that in 125 lessons will allow you to teach a child 12,600 words.
Wow, I need that.
A lot of parents, a lot of people need that.
Right.
But it's a direct instruction program, and it's just amazing. So there are 14 rules that we need to learn, and then the child can construct from bits and pieces of word 12,600 correct words. So if you're interested, somewhere down the road.
Yes, exactly. Well, thank you so much, Michael.
My pleasure.
Definitely enjoyed this conversation again, and just all the new things you had to share with us and our audience. And thank you for answering, all their questions. And if you do have more questions for Michael, just know that you can contact him. I'm going to put up your website here so that people can find you, and your contact information is on there. So it's the Maloney Method. So www.maloneymethod.com. And then, of course, you can find us at spedhomeschool.com. And we are, again, a nonprofit, and we appreciate viewers like you who support our broadcast through donations. We are 100% donation funded. And this is the end of our month on reading remediation. Next month, we are focusing on communication, which what we were talking about is the language part. We need to get kids to communicate before they can read. So we're kind of doing it backwards. But the wonderful thing about October, it is National AAC Month. And so there's lots of really big deals on AAC products, which one of our guests is going to talk about. Actually, next week, I'm doing two interviews because I'm traveling the week after that. So next Tuesday, we're going to be talking about practical ways to teach nonverbal learners. And then Friday afternoon, I'm doing another broadcast, and we're going to be talking about free and low-cost resources to support AAC learners. So you'll definitely want to be part of both of those. And check that out. So anyways, thank you all for joining us. Thanks for listening on the podcast, watching on YouTube, or watching us live. We appreciate our audience that joins us, because you definitely are part of this conversation. And also, join our support group if you aren't part of that. That's where we keep the conversation going all week. So until then, we'll see you all. Have a great night, and we'll see you next week. Bye, everyone.
Bye.